And we're going to be getting some fishing reports from around the area. Let's go up first and talk to Wayne Miller. Wayne's on the Mobile Tensaw Delta. Wayne, how's this heat affecting things?
Well, Joe, I'll tell you what, man, it feels more like August than it does September. It's really been a tough week from the standpoint of just the weather. I mean, it really gets hot. It's been by 9:30. It's pretty uncomfortable out there. You know, we've had reasonably good tides this week, and, you know, the fish have bit, you know, pretty good. I mean, we've had a high tide early in the morning, and then the water moving out. Not a super strong tide, but enough current, you know, out in the main rivers that's really helped the bite that we're in right now, which is basically just a summertime bite. I mean, we have not transitioned into a fall bite whatsoever, where you're up, you know, in the flats and in the creeks, you know, throwing spinnerbaits and, you know, shallow running crankbaits. Everything's still pretty much summer patterns out, you know, fishing plastic jigs and stuff, you know, in the main rivers. So, you know, but it's been pretty good with the tidal movement that we've had.
And so you mentioned being out there, you know, things kind of shutting down before 9:30. Is this kind of the same deal? Is it a real late bite in the evenings?
Yeah, you know, it picks back up, you know, across the afternoon. But, you know, during the heat of the day, it's a pretty tough grind out there right now. You know, now we're moving in next week. We move into a full moon cycle. And then going into October, man, we had some really fantastic tides there at the end of September going into October. So looks like that's going to coincide with some really good cold front that we've got coming next week. So, you know, maybe some of this, you know, better fishing is right around the corner for us.
Wayne, let's talk a little bit about those tides. You know, the Mobile Delta, and we've talked about this before, but it's one of the only places that bass fishermen have to contend with tides, and there's really a lot to it. And you mentioned that we've got some really good tides coming up. So tell everybody what exactly you look for in a good tide.
Well, you know, typically what I like to see, you know, this time of year and going on into the fall is I love to see a high tide, you know, early in the morning. I'm not talking about like at 3 o'clock in the morning. I like for it, the water to move and get to its highest peak around 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, because what you have then is you have that last little bit of the incoming tide, and then the water typically on a real strong tide cycle, it turns around quick. So within an hour, you know, you've got that water falling back out. So really, you've got the best of both worlds. You get the tail end of that incoming tide, and then you get to fish all day long on the outgoing tide. And, you know, I mean, you'll have different opinions on, you know, you talk to some people and they'll swear that, you know, you only want to fish an outgoing tide. And there's a lot of people that, you know, love an incoming tide. But for me, you know, what I really like to see is just that water moving, because any current is moving bait. And anytime you're moving bait, bass is such an opportunistic feeder that, you know, it doesn't matter to them. They don't care if that crawfish is going past them left to right or right to left. If they see him, they're going to eat him.
Do you do anything different on an incoming tide as opposed to an outgoing tide in terms of how you set up and, you know, where you position your boat around structure, around creek mouths, anything like that?
Yeah, it really does make a big difference in how you, you know, the areas that you target, because, you know, as we progress into the cooler months and these fish really start, you know, keying on, you know, you'll be able to catch them on spinner baits and, you know, fast moving baits. But anytime you have that high tide, I like to target areas that have vegetation where you have that water up over that grass, because it enables you to work baits right over the top of it and actually through the top of that grass. And, you know, one thing that we love down here, that's pretty unique to our fishery, on the lower end of the delta is you have ribbon grass. And, man, any time you find ribbon grass, and I know you know this, Joe, but, you know, as we move into fall, you take a spinnerbait, and, man, the bass just absolutely love that ribbon grass. And you can, you know, you can work a bait over the top of it and actually through it. But that's real good to target those type areas on a high tide. So, you know, that high tide and moving water and the low tide really determines specific areas that you pinpoint and target during the day. And on a low tide, I love the ditch mouse because what it'll do, it'll pull those fish out typically and concentrate them on either a drop or a piece of hard structure that's somewhere around that creek mouth.
Wayne, I don't care what anybody says. You know some stuff about bass fishing, man.
Well, man, I tell you what, I love it. And there's, you know, we're really blessed here because, you know, even though we've got tough conditions right now, it's really been tough this week with this weather. You know, as we progress into October, everybody knows, man, you know, the fishing's just right on the verge of really kicking off and getting fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, thanks. Thank you very much, and good luck out there this weekend. Stay cool, man.
Okay. Appreciate it, Jeff.
All right. Let's move on down a little bit. We're going to talk to Mike Thompson. Mike, we were talking with Wayne, and I was just mentioning how dang hot it is. What's going on around the causeway?
Well, Joe, it is the same. It is miserably hot, you know, especially when you get after 10 or 11 o'clock. I don't see how people would stand to be out in it. And, you know, you'd have to really be on top of the fish for you to avoid the misery. Mm-hmm. But that being said, there's still a lot of redfish being caught at the upper end of the bay and up into the lower part of the delta. They just seem to be bulletproof. I mean, if you can't catch anything else, you're going to catch some redfish if you got some frisky live bait. And speaking of live bait, I talked with the Scott brothers, and they were out shrimping this morning, and the places where they had been doing real well on the live shrimp, all of a sudden there's been a lot of jellyfish have moved in, which make things extra tough. You know, number one, to keep the bait alive, and just number two, haul your nets in. It's so heavy with the jelly.
Right.
Now, one of the things that they mentioned was, you know, for good or bad, they're catching a lot of small flounder, and everybody's been concerned about what our flounder situation is like, but it looks like there's, you know, quite a few small fish in the area, so that's good news. Now, let's talk about a little bad news. I hate to bring it up, but earlier in the week, they had like a mini jubilee on the eastern shore. When I say a mini jubilee, there not a whole lot of flounders came in, but a lot of shrimp and crabs came into the shore. And some people were able to scoop up some of the shrimp and a few of the crabs. But, you know, when you have a jubilee, normally it occurs when there's some real warm water and extremely low oxygen. And the fish are moving to the shore looking for that oxygen. Well, something that can't move to the shore are the crabs and the crabbers' crab traps. The crabbers complain they were losing 80 to 90% of their crabs. They'd pick their traps up and the crabs would be dead. And they'd have to, you know, shuck them out of there.
Yeah.
And moving into today, there was even some crabbers that reported they're still losing a few, not like it was early in the week. But, you know, that low oxygen is really hurting things.
Well, and that's that's another important reason why when they do the derelict crab trap removal, every year, you know, those traps that get them out of the water, and they take a few days to have all the crabbers take their traps out so they can get those traps that have been lost and whatnot out of the water, so it's not, you know, inadvertently killing crabs and other things. So the good news on that is, and don't quote me on this, but, you know, I've talked with Bob Shipp quite a bit about blue crabs, and he says that they almost the majority of them, if I remember this correctly, die every year. So there, you almost cannot over harvest them or anything like that. So it's tough to hear, but it's circle of life, I guess.
Well, that kind of reminds me what they say about ducks and doves. You can't stockpile them. A certain amount of them are going to perish through natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
So why not, as sportsmen, take advantage of some of that.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, sportsmen are the original conservationists. You know, you're talking about ducks, and we've got teal seasons going on. You know, sportsmen are the ones that are enhancing the habitat, those brooding areas up in Canada, and, you know, organizations like Delta Waterfowl and Ducks Unlimited. You know, that's what they do, and that's all funded by hunters. And same thing on the angling side of things. So, you know, a lot of times that gets construed, but really without hunters and anglers, none of this stuff exists in the first place. So
that's true. You mentioned, you know, the teal season is going on. It's been very poor so far. There's been a few people that's gotten a limit, but most people are really not seeing that many. And the season here in Alabama is going out this weekend. However, as Wayne mentioned, we got a full moon cycle coming up, and full moon is the time when a lot of waterfowl will migrate using that bright light to help them navigate, you know, from the north to the south. So years ago, I gathered a bunch of sportsmen, and we got a petition together to try to get the teal season pushed back to the farthest you could push it in September. And we got 300 to 400 signatures, and we got it up to the people, and I talked to one of the head men up there, and he says, I have to tell you this, sir, there's more people in the state hunt teal besides you guys on the coast.
Right.
And our guys up north, they like it a little earlier.
Right.
So anyway, we missed out on that, because next week we'll be covered with teal after the season's over.
Of course. Well, we can go out and snap some photos. Mike, thanks for the report.
Okay, Joe.
Be safe out there. All right, let's head on up to Pickwick Lake. We're talking with Brad Whitehead. Brad, I understand that the smallmouth bite and the spotted bass bite has turned on.
It has got better. Let me tell you, they have been running some water. We had a trip yesterday from 6 to 12. I think we had a total of 27. Now, we don't have any of the big ones yet made it up there, but they are coming up the lake toward those shed, those threadfin shed, and I'm ready to catch a few more.
I bet. Mostly smallmouth or a good mix of both?
It's a good mix of both. You know, yesterday we really had a huge mix bag. We caught blues, we caught channels, we caught drum. We caught basically everything that feeds on minnows except for a largemouth bass. That was the only thing that really shocked me. We didn't catch a largemouth, which is fine. I'll trade them for spots and smallmouth all day.
Talk to me a little bit about this live bait fishing. When you're fishing for these fish, how exactly are you doing? Are you tight lining? Are you putting the baits on the bottom? Are you mixing things up?
It's really simple. I've got a simple setup. One of the things you do need to remember is if you're going to do it, actually take threadfin shad or you know, any type of bait out of the lake, you need a round tank.
Mm-hmm.
They'll nose theirself into your live well if you put them in there. And once they get what we call red face, they're history.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hardest part. Now, we've got several bait stores that sell, I guess they'd be considered pond-raised minnows that you can use, bass shiners. But I like getting stuff out of the lake.
Right.
We've got a real simple setup. We use 10-pound vicious line. We use a bait hook and a split shot. Now, that's kind of the key to the whole deal, is having enough weight to go to the bottom. You know, you don't want to have too light. You don't want to have too heavy that you're going to get hung up. So just, you know, a little bit of experience, a little bit of time on the water, and you'll figure out the right set side of, you know, split shot that you need to make it to the bottom.
Last week we talked about catching those shad, and you mentioned this. This is something that I've noticed in saltwater. You know, we have a lot of the same kind of bait fish with pogies and Spanish sardines, and it's the same family of fish. And you're exactly right. When you have a live well, you have to have a circular enclosure, or else those fish will run into the corners, and it beats a lot of their scales off. They lose a lot of slime, and just like what you're talking about, when they get red face, you might as well go ahead and take them out of your live well. That's another thing is, do you find that if you don't take those fish that are dying out, that they'll actually kill some of your other fish?
They do. I kind of described it, and I'll make it quick. What you have to do, and something you have to pay attention to, and a good live bait fisherman will always do this. If you actually take a cast net, catch your minnows, and put them in your tank, what you want to do is flush the water out. What happens is they get nervous. They excrete some type of something out of their bodies, and it gets in the water, and it's basically like putting ammonia in your tank. So what you want to do, you want to flush out that as soon as you get your bait and pump them full of fresh water. And you want green, you want to make sure you keep them where they look in their most natural state, because I'm going to tell you, 6-7 pound smallmouth will know the difference.
I believe it. I believe it. Well, Brad, it's super hot right now, but we got some cool temperatures on the horizon. If folks want to get up with you and get after some of those smallmouth, how can they get in touch with you?
No doubt. Give me a call at 256-483-0834 or check me out on Facebook, send me a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible.
All right, Brad Whitehead, Lake Pickwick. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, let's head over to Lake Martin, talk to Captain David Hare. David, it is hot, man.
Man, what you talking about? You doing all right, Joe?
Oh, man, we're 2 days away from fall, and, by the time this airs, actually, it will be fall, and it does not feel like it.
It sure doesn't. It is definitely hot up here. We got a surface temp up here of about 90 to 91 degrees right now. And I tell you what, we were wearing out the fish, and this week they've slowed down from the heat. But of course, next week, it's supposed to start cooling off again, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, as we get into fall and we're looking at these cooler temperatures and water temperatures start to cool, What type of pattern change do you see with the stripers on Lake Martin?
You talking about when it cools off?
Yes.
When it cools off, they'll actually start grouping back together, schooling back together, instead of being just roaming,
Mm-hmm.
They'll start schooling back up, and they'll start out in about the sort of on the south end, but then they'll just gradually start moving north up the lake and up toward the river. The cooler the water gets, and they'll sort of stage there, what we call the middle part of the lake, up on the northern end. And once they do that, they'll pretty much stay there for several months. You'll have a few that'll run up the river when it gets real, real cold for a few weeks. But other than that, they'll sort of just hang in the middle part of the lake.
Do the fish on Lake Martin, do they pretty much stay at the same depths for the most part throughout the year, or do they change as the seasons progress?
Oh, no, they'll change as the season changes. Sometime probably toward the end of October, they'll start getting closer and closer toward the top, and then all through the winter you can catch them from about 35 feet all the way to the surface.
And last week we were talking a little bit, you said you are catching most of your fish on downriggers. Do you ever use a kite? Have you ever tried that?
No, we haven't. And I definitely know what you're talking about, but no, we don't use that up here on freshwater lakes.
Right. We use that some offshore, and the bite is just, it's amazing to see a fish always eat at the top water. Are there ways to catch those fish on top water?
Oh, yes. In fact, we'll be, as soon as the water starts cooling off and these fish start sort of schooling back together, We'll be right back to live baiting again, and we can get those fish to come all the way up on top and hit these live bait up on top. So, and we'll cast some top water stuff out of them also. So, yes, sir, we catch a lot of fish right up on top.
All right. Well, it's hot right now, but there is some cooling in the horizon. I can't wait for it. If folks want to get in touch with you and come fish Lake Martin, how can they do that?
Best way to get me is either call or text me at 256-401-3089. Of course, you can look me up on my website, and it's got all my contact information, LCityGuideService.com, or follow me on Facebook, LCityGuideService Lake Martin.
All right. Thanks, Cap. Be safe out there.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good week.
We are going to be talking next to Captain Richard Rutland, and Richard is going to be telling us about some of my favorite things. Richard, tell us about those. Cobia, and tell us about those triple tail, man. What's going on?
Cobia, I thought we were talking about brim.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, brim. That's it.
No, man. That nearshore cobia bite has been unbelievable this year. It's been a lot of fun. The weather has been absolutely gorgeous ever since Tropical Storm or Hurricane Gordon went through here, and it's been very fruitful.
So tell us a little bit about this, Kobe. I know the offshore guys have really struggled with them this year. You know, usually when you're fishing offshore for snapper and bottom fishing and things of that nature, amberjack, things like that, you're going to catch a few cobia just kind of inadvertently as they show up on reefs and whatnot. But that was almost non-existent this year. But you guys have been doing really well as we get a little closer to shore. Explain a little bit about the process.
Man, I agree with what you're saying about how it's been tough all summer while you're out there just inadvertently bumping into them here and there. That has not happened a whole lot. But and I don't know where these fish are going. They're obviously doing something different because they're all showing up right here at the mouths of all these bays. You know, Mobile Bay, Pensacola. I've got some reports out of Pensacola and over into Mississippi and Louisiana. It's been really good. But I really think that they stack up right out here to stage – kind of to gorge on all the pogies and just plentiful bait that we have in the area before they make their migration back south. So
and they kind of just they stage up on vertical structure, so things like anchor chains and buoy chains and pilings
and rigs,
oil and, rigs, and you know
we've seen them on even on pilings, you know, mm-hmm. Just anchored up that are out in the bay and whatnot, and then we're just outside the Gulf. So it's but that's the name of the game. Finding vertical structure or something floating is the two things that I'm looking for. You don't really catch them a whole lot on reefs and stuff like that, rock piles or things like that. It's more you got to have something vertical in that water column.
Now, if you go over to Destin, you know the water's so clear and blue that you can see these fish. Around here, we got a little bit dirtier water, more fertile water, but a little dirtier water. So these fish aren't always right up at the top of the water, right? You know, do you recommend, you know, kind of looking for fish first and then fishing, or do you mix it up and stay in one spot and kind of vary your depths?
Man, most of the time I'm trying to cover as much water as I possibly can. I'm not very good at sitting still in one spot unless I have some confidence that something is there. And something I use to gain that confidence is my electronics. Mm-hmm. I've started using my electronics a lot, especially the side scan and down scan that on my Raymarine, where we are basically scanning them. If I'll pull up real slow to a buoy or to a rig or to a ship or something like that, and I'll visually give the fish a minute to pop up if they're there, and if they're not, then I'll kind of start idling by real slow and scanning and using those electronics, and it's amazing the amount of detail you can get to where you can tell if there's one fish, two fish, four fish down there.
That's amazing. Yeah. So with your side scan, you know, let's talk about those ships at anchorage. You know, those ships draft when they're full. You know, they're drafting 35 feet of water or so. So you're actually able to use those electronics to see under that ship and see where fish are and see on the side of that ship.
On the sides of the ship, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. Underneath, you can see if there's a fish in between the boat and the ship, mm-hmm. you know, but mm-hmm. I don't know how far underneath I'm really looking on the ship. It okay. really comes into play on the ships, on the anchor chain and on the stern, because gotcha. you can scan the stern and you can actually see when you start to hit the rudder and if there's something sitting right underneath the rudder or right under the props, and then the belly of the hull goes a little bit deeper. And you can't see as well, but I can definitely, like when I pull up to that anchor chain and start looking at my electronics, I can tell you if there's fish there and at what depth to drop your bait to.
And you've been catching some triple tail as well?
Oh, yeah, black fishing's been real good. That tropical storm, that Gordon, when it came through, a ton of fish showed up. I was seeing upwards, you know, like 6 to 12 fish a day just floating on the surface or on wow. trash. Something like that, and then you get around some of those buoys and catch some bigger ones. But yeah, there's been several. It's been a real good like week and a half, I would say, of black fishing here lately.
Well, good deal. Well, stay after him, Richard. Folks, if y'all want to get in touch with Richard, y'all just check him out online at Cold Blooded Fishing or on Facebook. Thanks a lot, Richard.
Hey, thank y'all for having me. Y'all have a good week.
All right, let's go next and switch it over to freshwater. We're going to Miller's Ferry and talking to Joe Dunn. Joe, how's it going?
Oh, doing great.
Tell us a little bit about what's going on. It's been hot. That's been the name of the show today, is talking about how hot it is. And so what's going on with the fishing side of things in Miller's Ferry?
Yeah, the heat's definitely been rough. But up there, you know, with all the rain we've had this year, we've had a super high pool. You know, you don't have to worry about low water conditions right now. And typically that's what you want this time of year, but they're not here. I was over there the other day looking, and I got my marker stump that I kind of gauge, you know, where the fish are at by the how much water we got, and I haven't seen it all year long. So it's been staying high, but we've got real clear water, real pretty water over there right now. So the jugging's been doing real good, but the bass and catfish has been kind of slow. It ain't that they're not biting, it's just with this water being higher than normal, they're still more scattered out, not as concentrated as, you know, typically we would find them this time of year with low water. So that's kind of – and but hopefully things is going to change. Hopefully this some cool weather is going to be coming here for another week or so, and maybe that's going to help things out a little bit for your bass and your crappie.
Now, Joe, I'm a freshwater novice, especially when it comes to catfish, but I love – eating catfish, and especially love the really small ones that I can fry whole. What do you do differently to target that size catfish as opposed to bigger cats, or do you target them at all?
Oh, yes, definitely. And when you're going after the smaller fish, you would fish basically more tight line style out off that first break in the river, that first drop. And you will use a smaller hook and smaller bait. That's all you got to do. Drop down to at least, say, a 3/4 to a 1 ounce lead on the bottom. Come up with about anywhere from a number 2 to a number 1 in a crappie style, you know, that type fine wire hook, I would say. And then, you know, put a smaller bait. You would cut, you know, smaller pieces of shad. Instead of using a great big hunk, you would use a smaller one, you know, cut piece. And then thread it on there, and you catch all of them you want.
Well, as we do start to get some cooler temperatures, what do you look for in terms of a pattern change? And I'm praying we get some cooler temperatures we need.
Yeah.
But what do you look for in terms of a pattern change as we start to cool off?
Well, especially for the crappie, they're going to go to getting tighter and tighter. The first cooling spell, they'll still be out in the river, but they're going to, they'll move up to that first ledge then, usually at around, you know, anywhere from 15 to 18 feet and be in those tops, you know, real tight. Sometimes you'll start off fishing over the top of them, mm-hmm. either with a jig or a jig with a minnow tipped on it. And then you will go, you can, you know, then go with a, you know, like a drop shot rig or what I call a tight line type rig. And, you know, you put your 1 ounce lead on the bottom and come up about a 18 inch or so and tie out with your hook, and then you just feel around in that top and get, you know, all inside of it and then all the way to the bottom. And then as the weather progresses and it goes to getting colder and colder, those fish will go out there and drop further and further off that ledge. And then when you go to having high water, if high water conditions hit, sometimes they'll have to come back up higher and get behind that structure to fight, you know, stay out of that current. You hunt eddies and stuff then, mm-hmm. and then it won't be long to be back to our spring phase where they'll go to moving back up inside and shallow. But through the winter, you're going to stay out there on them ledges most of the time.
Well, Joe, before we had you on, you know, I was talking to Richard Rutland, and he was talking about using his electronics, and he does a lot of cobia fishing, and he's talking about using his electronics to and how the advancements have really changed the way he fishes. And I've seen some photos of that he's taken of his electronics and marking these fish, you know, under structure and that kind of thing. But you know what I like about you, Joe, is you just use an old stump to figure out where they are.
Well, that's what I do out when I look out in the backyard. But the electronics is a big player in the crappie fishing too,
yeah.
Big time. Now, if you want to be successful, you're hunting those tops that nobody else fishes.
Right.
So you can't go by there and say, well, here's a big top, this is where that. Yes, but about 10 different people's done fished that top where you got to it that morning too, usually.
Yep. Well, Joe, we got to let you go, man. Well, good luck this weekend, and thanks for the report.
All right, appreciate it. We'll see y'all later.
All right.